101.9 FM and Queer FM for the lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgendered communities. That's Amanda Marshall and Let It Rain. And my name is Heather.
And I'm Craig Maynard.
And you can call us at 822-2487, and it's kind of the alternative sexualities show today. We've got Colin Upright and Shauna Murphy here from Biface to talk about the BC Bisexual Conference, and also Shauna's research into the experience of bisexuals in the gay community and this kind of thing. But there's also another conference happening this weekend in Seattle, which is the Female to Male Transsexual Conference.
And Heather interviewed
Corey
from the conference, and we'll let you listen to that interview.
So, well, I guess first of all, just give me an inkling into how you guys came up with the idea to plan this conference. What inspired it?
Well, the conference actually, this is the second conference.
Second one in Seattle, or?
No, the second one in the United States. The first one was in San Francisco last August. And I don't know really what the guys down there, what their purpose for getting the conference together. I think mainly was educational and informational.
Mm-hmm.
But for the people here in Seattle, we wanted to form a sense of community and continuity, and also continue the goals of educating not only the general public but ourselves, educating ourselves about different erotic identities and different definitions for what it means to be female to male in this culture, and different ways in which we can organize to acquire civil rights in the United States.
Mm-hmm. So how many people are down there, and are they coming from all over the place? Or?
We don't know the numbers. I'm guessing over 250. I'm guessing close to 300 people.
Wow.
And there are people from England, from Canada, from Australia.
Wow.
And I don't know if anybody came from south of the border, but that's the information I have so far.
Hmm. So what is the structure like? Like, are you breaking off into plenary sessions and things like that, or?
Yeah, the first night, which was Friday night, we had a drag show and fashion show, and we had speakers from different communities in Seattle, the gay and lesbian community, the mayor, yesterday we had panels all day long, panels on identity and political activism and history, and sexuality, and today it's an all-day thing, presentation about medical concerns, surgical concerns, and stuff, and psychological concerns.
Hmm. So now you're obviously one of the organizers, but have you had much chance to sit in on the session?
Well, I actually didn't have any. I had I presented one panel on FTM identity, and then I helped conduct two other panels, one on racism and one on finding a partner.
Hmm.
So my whole day, since I got there, about 6 or 7 hours were taken up with panels or wrap sessions.
So were there any sort of resolutions or anything that came out of the workshops that you chaired?
Well, we realized that an hour and a half is far too short to talk about racism.
Sure.
You know, and so that, and it was really interesting because I was on the panel, and there were two FTMs, black FTMs, and myself, I'm Hispanic,
mm-hmm.
and my first comment to the group was, my experience being Hispanic is that I'm invisible. I'm more invisible than somebody who's black. And then from then on, the rest of the time was taken over with issues of black and white. So that I can't.
So you were invisible again.
Invisibility. It was very ironic.
Oh, weird.
Yeah, but that was an important thing for me to see too. You know, mm-hmm. sometimes I go around in my head with my ideas, and and I take them for granted, and the reality of my life is the reality of my life.
Mm-hmm.
And the FTM identity one, which was one of the most highly attended, was very charged with emotion. It was very it was very positive, because some of us have begun to identify or live as men without taking hormones or without having any surgeries. And that's a new way of identifying. And there was a lot of, the reason why we did that panel is because there was a lot of resistance to that in the FTM community.
No, interesting. So do you feel that there's more understanding now after having that discussion?
Well, it was, the people there were a tiny fraction of all of the support groups in the United States and outside of the United States. But I think it's beginning to plant a seed to bring about change.
Mm-hmm.
People were very impressed by the speaker's courage, and it was something new to think about. And we aired a lot of the fears, and that is a lot of traditional and conservative F2Ms think that if new people, new identities come in, that we will be marginalized out of existence.
Mm-hmm.
And that's important to air, because that's not the truth. There's room for everybody. And it only strengthens the movement when we can widen the definition of male and female to be something other than two boxes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was in that box and I came over in this box, because that doesn't do anything to dismember the economy of gender.
Mm-hmm. So what would you say, having been in, I guess, three sessions yesterday, what have the highlights been for you so far?
The highlights have been being in a building with so many F2Ms was really, really emotional and empowering for me, because I know that we're out there, but it was almost spiritual to be in a building with so many other people that face the same issues that I do, or at least some of the same issues that I do.
Mm-hmm.
And another highlight was that I met very few Hispanic F2Ms, and that is sort of a loss that I take with me, and a concern that I take with me, and a new focus of where I want to put my energy into forming a community of Hispanic F2Ms. Because when I decided to transition, I lost my family because they couldn't deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
And family, the extended family, is the basis of the Hispanic culture and society. And so my need now is to form some sort of society of people that share my culture.
Mm.
You know, and we were not there in numbers, or if we were, I wasn't aware of them.
Mm-hmm.
And the rest of it is that there's enough interest from people outside of the FTM community that gives me hope, hope that the idea of gender will become more fluid, and hope that maybe one day will be accepted by society as a whole.
Mm-hmm. I actually wanted to ask you about that. Were there a lot of non-FTM people down at the conference for various reasons?
Yes, there were a lot of people. There were a lot of cross-dressers from the lesbian community. There were a lot of male-to-female transsexuals. There were a lot of just genetic men and women who were interested in gender and who were curious about who and what we were. There were a lot of people that were interested in us sexually, which was really an eye-opener for me. I have gone through being afraid of approaching people because of the discrepancies in my body. Because I may look male, but I don't have a penis, and I don't want to have a penis. I want to have what I have. But it's like a lot of times people freak out because they say, well, if you're a male identify, why don't you have a penis? And that's what I've come across.
Mm-hmm.
If I've dated gay men, or if I've dated someone who considers herself a straight woman, which is something else I've never understood, because I don't think anybody that goes out with me is straight. Because it just, if you deal with me wholly in a physical way, you know, I don't have a penis, and so, you understand?
Mm-hmm.
That was really interesting.
Now, you mentioned there was also a forum on history.
That was part of the identity, too.
Okay.
Reclaiming our history. Most people don't realize that there were passing women and there were F2Ms all through history. We have a huge archive, or we're trying to get together a huge archive about F2Ms in the United States, and then we're going to move on to other countries. And we are all through history, but a lot of times our history has been recorded as lesbian history, because there's that threading in commonality that we share. But a lot of people that have been claimed as lesbians really were F2M, in our opinion. Not all of them, but certainly some of them. And we have two people right now, Jason Cromwell, who's a cultural anthropologist, and Ken Morris, who are working very hard to set up at least some historical basis for our existence. A lot of times the prejudice we encounter, especially from the mainstream media, is ignorance about the fact that we exist. We're not a fad, and we didn't start 5 years ago on a Geraldo show, you know? Because I remember somebody saying to me, oh, weren't you on the cover? And so I go, yeah. And he says, oh, you're an F2M, right? And I go, yeah. He goes, yeah, everybody is this year. Well, you know, I was an F2M way long before I met you, before I met the cover of that magazine, before I made the cover of the magazine, and before anybody ever got on a talk show. Yeah, we were there. And that's part of the reason that we need to document our history.
So, I mean, can you think of any off the top of your head, like heroes from the past?
Billy Tipton.
Okay.
And Alan Hart. And there was a pope in 1855 called Pope Joan, who was known as John the Eighth, Pope John the Eighth.
Wow.
Yeah. I think the church is denying it, but there are archives actually showing that Pope John the Eighth existed. James Howell, Christian Davies, James Gray, John Taylor, James Allen, James Barry, Charlie Parkins, Frank Du Bois, Charlie Wilson, Murray Hall, Little Joe Monahan, there was a movie out about Little Joe Monahan, and it was a complete distortion of his life.
Oh, wow.
And it was very upsetting, you know. Johann Berger, Michael Dillon, Lou Sullivan, who's really important. He died a few years ago, and I had the opportunity to meet him, and he forged a lot of ground in the F2M community itself, because he was gay identified. And at the time, nobody wanted to come out with their orientation or their erotic identity other than being straight, because that's how we've been groomed by the medical and psychological and psychiatric communities to believe. You know, we go through years and years of therapy that reinforces the stereotype that we are straight identified, when really many of us, I mean, at least the people I know, are bi or gay identified. And then last year, Brandon Tina, who was murdered in the Midwest, I believe what happened was that he had a few tickets outstanding, and the police outed him in the newspaper, and a brother and an ex-boyfriend of the woman he was dating, after constant harassment, raped and murdered him. And when the press got a hold of the story, they recorded his name as being Tina Brandon, even though he had been living full-time as a man for a few years. And that's how our history is appropriated, when we die, you know. And then we don't have a voice to say, this is not how I want to be remembered. There were a lot more. I couldn't copy all the names down. I was doing a slideshow and I was trying to write as fast as I could.
But anyway, yeah, so it sounds like a very empowering conference.
Yeah.
Is there?
Very happy that it's going on.
And you said today is the forum on surgical concerns?
Today is the forum on surgical concern and dealing with the medical and psychiatric communities, and what kind of surgeries people have available. We also, what kind of the dosages of hormones, what the changes are going to be, And we also have a specific rap group that's a couple of hours long, focusing on those of us in the community who do not want to take hormones and who do not want to have surgery. And that's a first. Okay. Because there's a lot of pressure within the community to have us conform. You have to take hormones. You have to do surgery. If you don't, you're not really FTM.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And so it was important to put that rap group in there.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. So, you know, what do you hope is going to come out of the conference, and what kind of resolutions are happening so far?
Well, what I hope that comes out of the conference is, first of all, a continued effort to organize locally, to fight local government, and to try to establish our presence in society. That's in the long run. In the short run, we've established an organization called Female to Male Conference Education Project here in Seattle, which will be bringing out, among other things, a newsletter about the conference, and hopefully when people start to network, then there'll be projects, creative projects that will help the community and maybe strengthening ties with other communities in existence now, you know, just making ourselves visible. The reason we don't have rights, aside from having been denied our history, is that many of us pass so well that we don't have to do anything, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
We don't have to go out there and put our lives on the line, but if we do that, then we don't have any rights either. So this is, hopefully, this is my hope, is that people will organize and actually start to be politically active and acquire rights for us.
CITR 101.9 FM and Queer FM for the lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender communities. My name is Heather.
And I'm Craig Maynard.
And you just heard from Unit 3 UK, and we are family. And we're joined on the phone right now. We've been talking about the Female to Male Transsexual Conference in Washington State in Seattle. And we're joined by another reporter from that conference right now, James Lowen. How are you doing down there?
I'm doing just great, Heather. I've had a fantastic weekend.
Wonderful. Now, you're sort of, you kind of were an observer down there. You're not actually a FTM yourself.
No, I'm not.
Point that out. But, give us a scoop. What workshops did you check out this weekend?
Well, I checked out a couple of workshops specifically on gay and bi and queer issues. And I'll tell you that when you're in a room full of 40 or 50 people coming from all different perspectives and the focus is transgendered issues, the boundaries are certainly blurred and it becomes a very interesting experience.
You mean in terms of the contrast between gay identity and transgendered identity and how the two overlap?
Indeed. And what was revealed time and time again was just how often people who experience transgendered lives find themselves surprised at their own sexuality, which is emerging as they transform from one gender to the other.
Hmm.
The number of gay and bisexual identified transgendered men and it was very interesting talking with them and hearing some of their stories. And a lot of them were quite surprised by their own homosexuality, I guess, once they transformed into men, how they were then attracted to men.
And they'd started out being?
Very often they started out in lesbian relationships as women with other women.
Hmm.
And now they're men with other men.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yes.
Hmm. So did you spend a fair amount of your time at the identity forums then?
Yes, and a great deal of time in between, just talking with people from all over North America and all over the spectrum of human sexuality. Fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
One transgendered man from London, England, who identifies as a hermaphrodite, not wanting to lose his former lesbian identity.
Oh, wow.
And yet growing a beard and appearing in many ways very masculine indeed.
Oh, wow.
And
that's
yes. a number of men who really turned my head as a gay man, found extremely attractive, and quite mind-boggling to then talk with them about the attraction and how they, genetically female, now living as men and living as gay men.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. So now there was also, I know that there was conferences yesterday on history and race as well. Did you get to any of those?
I didn't go to the race get-together. There was a lot that I had to miss because there was a lot happening at once. And, of course, when you've only got one body, you can only attend one event. There's a lot of it that I truly regret that I couldn't be in two places at one time.
Mm-hmm.
Today we had medical discussions the whole day, and the focus was, of course, on chest reduction surgery, construction of penis through different ways, either what's called metoidoplasty, mm-hmm. which is a freeing of the clitoris, and results in a very small penis, but a very cosmetically attractive one, or phalloplasty, which is quite a different story and involves lifting tissue from the abdomen and the forearm in order to create sensation in the newly constructed phallus.
Hmm.
Not always the most attractive cosmetic results. So as a result, a lot of the trans men are opting to go for the simpler surgery and or just remaining genitally intact and living as men, but retaining female genitalia.
Mm-hmm. Well, I imagine, now I know that your background is in as an activist against circumcision. So is this, I would imagine this is kind of fascinating to you in that regard as well.
It is. It's very fascinating. And what's most heartening to me is how many transgendered people immediately understand the issues around childhood genital mutilation and are just appalled at the idea that a child would be subjected to this at birth or shortly thereafter.
Mm-hmm. So what else, you know, happened in the medical forum today as well? I mean, it wasn't just surgery, presumably. They were also talking about hormones and therapy and
yes,
all those popular topics.
Indeed it is. And, of course, a number of the men present are on hormones, and the effect of testosterone on the human body is quite dramatic.
Mm-hmm.
And for that reason, many of these men really blend in as men. They're, you know, quite unreadable in society as anything but men.
So, I guess it's all over now. It's wrapped up down there, right?
It has, although there's an art show opening this evening of photography and other artworks that are all done by transgendered men. And I got a glimpse of it last night, and it's just fantastic. There's some beautiful black and white photography. I'm reaching for my notes here, and I'm fumbling. The fellow's name is Dean. He's from Portland. Beautiful portraits of transgendered men
and
some beautiful portraits of the surgery.
Hmm.
Michael Kirk from Boston, transgendered man who documented his own transformation with Polaroid photographs, which he has layered with other media in order to tell his story and the reaction of people to him. And another artist, again, I apologize for not having the names right handy here, but who works in three-dimensional sculpture, paper mache, and other materials. And it's apparently getting a very good response from the general community. A lot of people are hearing about it and coming to see it. So it's going to be a popular evening tonight. And plus the emotional high that we've all been on who have been at this conference, just meeting each other and exchanging ideas, I think tonight it's going to wrap up there in a very, very nice note.
Super. Craig, you had a question.
Yeah, I did. James, it's Craig here.
I'm sorry, Craig, I can't hear you.
Oh, sorry. Can you hear me now?
Yes, I sure can.
Okay, that's great. My question is, if you could just turn your mind back for just a second, you mentioned about some women who had surgery and then became men, but they were lesbians beforehand.
Yes.
Okay, and were they out lesbians?
Yes, indeed, some were. I would say most were, and I'm very optimistic about the fact that a number of these trans men are also coming out of the closet and speaking out on transgender issues and, you know, putting themselves out there.
Did they mention anything about their experiences with their friends after I guess, telling about their plans for reassignment, and then what would...
How did the lesbian community react?
Well, I won't say the lesbian community, but I'll say just their friends. We'll start with that.
Sure. There's a lot of talk of that, and of course there are very mixed responses, often very surprising ones, people that they least expected to receive support from becoming extremely supportive, and unfortunately vice versa. And I think most sad is when family members... don't come around and refuse to change the use of pronoun and so on.
Mm-hmm.
A number of people, unfortunately, who have had to disassociate with some friends and some family because of that. And
the Eurythmics. I Need You on CITR 101.9 FM from the album Savage. And this is Queer FM for the lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgendered communities. You can call in at 822-2487 if you have any questions for our wonderful guests. My name is Heather.
And I'm Craig Maynard. We're going to be talking first about the BC Bisexual Conference, and we've got Colin Upright here from Biface. And good evening, Colin.
Hey, how are you?
I'm doing fine. Let me just get you to lean a little bit closer.
Okay,
that's great. And we have Shauna Murphy with us as well. Shauna?
Hi!
Okay, whoa. She's normally a sound technician. Colin, we've got this first ever event coming up here. And maybe you can first tell us a little bit about where the idea came from.
Well, our group... called Biface, which is a support group, and we decided that this is sort of a joint effort between all of us, that we said, you know, it's about time that we put on a conference just to talk about issues and have a party at the same time. So we thought that we'll put it together and see what happens.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So, and now I guess we should get into the wheres.
Oh, okay.
The wheres, the whens.
Yeah.
And the how-tos.
Sure. Okay. It's on Saturday, September 7th, and it's at the Heritage Hall, and the address to the Heritage Hall is 3102 Main Street in Vancouver. And, we start, the conference timetable goes as registering and check-in time in the morning at 9:30. And we're just having a registration get-together. And then at 10 o'clock, we're having a preliminary session with just general discussion about bisexuality. And we're going to be discussing some issues around history of the movement and myths, of course, and identities and things around monogamy and non-monogamy and all kinds of relationship types and what people choose is best for them. And, you know, emotional and sexual attraction and the differences between that as well.
Oh, okay. Well, that sounds great. If I can get you, I'm just going to give you a little Radio 100 here.
Sure.
Your watch is hitting the table. So
and moving closer to the mic because we can't hear you.
Yeah.
Okay. Here.
We got to get you to lean. That's good.
There we go.
So just you remember all those bad radio commercials where you see people leaning into the mic yelling. Well, no, won't go that far.
Project that booming voice.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay.
Now. You said this came out of Biface, the support group, and the idea behind this. And can you, what do you hope to, what are some of the goals of the conference?
Well, I think what we're trying to do is make it really accessible to everyone who is bisexual. Those people that don't necessarily feel like they need support necessarily or want to talk about it, but just want to be involved with some other people that... are interested in getting together for a conference. You know, certainly we'll be talking a lot about issues and everything involved in that aspect, but I think it has a lot to do with just bringing the community together as well. So
Well, that sounds good. And speaking of the community, we're talking about a community where normally there isn't, well, we can't say the word normally, but there certainly hasn't been a very big identifiable community in the sense that it's been galvanized. And if you think of things like the lesbian community or the gay community, obviously you come to different images in your mind, but if you say the word the bisexual community, that's not as a clear picture.
Right. Yeah, for the most part, the bisexual community is a very hidden community, and it a lot has to do around the label of being bisexual, and I think a lot of people really find that misinterpreted, I guess, as being something other than what it is. And, you know, for the most part, people that are bisexual in some realm don't feel they would like to call themselves bisexual or be involved in a bisexual community because of the myths and stereotypes around being bi, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, that sounds like it's going to be... Now, there's... So we're going to have some discussions, are we, during the day?
Sure.
Okay. Yep. And roughly what those discussions are?
Yeah. Just talks about... actually, we're going to just have a general discussion in the morning and have open mics so people can talk and feel comfortable in coming up and speaking about what it means for them to be bisexual.
Right.
And then afterwards in the afternoon, we're going to have individual workshops, and one for men and one for women. And then AIDS Vancouver and the Positive Women Positive Women's Network are going to come and help us... just talk about safer sex and the latest news in HIV and AIDS from the International AIDS Conference. So
right, okay. And one more time, just a little bit closer to that
sure.
mic. Like a okay, there you go. You're starting to sound really good now.
Okay.
Okay, and then finally, there's going to be, it's not all talking heads, right?
Right.
And then the other thing is that in the evening, right after dinner time.
Sure. At right after at 7 o'clock, we're having bi readings and performances, and we're going to be having various people come up and participate in anything that they feel that can relate or you know, just sort of enhance the bi community and give everybody a chance to participate as well. And then at 8 o'clock, we're having a dance party called Dancing Both Ways. So, yeah. And so we'll have lots of performances and a good time. So, and there's a $5 cover for those people that don't want to come to the conference and just want to come to the dance. They can do that as well.
Oh, that's going to sound great.
Yeah.
So
I should talk about the fee schedule just quickly.
Yes, we better.
Just to tell you about what it costs. If you register before August 15th, which is Thursday coming up here, regular prices are $15 to $30, and students and lower income from $2 to $15. And then after August 15th, you get to save $5 by registering later on. And the regular prices are from $20 to $35, and students and lower income from $7 to $20. And those prices do include the dance party, so you're included in that. And if you want to get a hold of us and get more information on how to register and everything else, we have a byline. It's a number that everybody can call, and the number is 875-6336. And yeah.
Okay. Well, we'll repeat that number later on in
sure.
the evening. Now, where is it going to be?
It's going to be at the Heritage Hall on Main Street, and the address is 3102 on Main Street. It's on 15th and Main. And we're having our conference in the morning, or all day, and then the dance party in the evening. So,
Sounds really good. So, did you have any questions, Heather?
I was just going to say, why don't we go to a song? Because I want to.
Sure.
When we get back, we can talk to Shauna about her research
Great.
Into this matter.
And on the thoughts of music in the tail end of the conference.
CITR 101.9 FM, queer FM for the lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender communities, and it's raining men from the Weather Girls. There's a nice thought for the gay and bisexual man out there. And this is Heather.
And I'm Craig Maynard.
And you can call us at 822-2487 if you've got any questions for Shauna or Craig about the Bisexual Conference or about bisexuality in general. I'm sure they'd be only too happy to answer them, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, Colin may want to get in there, too.
Sure.
But in any case, we brought you guys on here for two reasons tonight. One, of course, was to introduce the BC Bisexual Conference, but also Shauna. I wasn't particularly surprised to learn that you were working on the conference, because I know that you're also working on a thesis about, and I'll let you explain it in front of a microphone now instead of yelling it from behind my shoulder.
Okay. Well, the title of the thesis is What's a Woman to Do? The Debates on Gender, Bisexuality, and Feminist Politics in Vancouver from 1970 to 1980.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's sort of a historical project, but I'm interested in doing it specifically because of the contemporary debates on bisexuality, and so I'm focusing on women, and what the project, what I'm actually going to be doing as far as methods is doing archival work on the feminist literature and lesbian literature that was around in Vancouver in the 70s, and then I'm going to be conducting some interviews with women who identified as either heterosexual, lesbian, or bisexual feminists in the 70s. And basically, one of my big questions that sparked this project was this question of why is it that people who might behave in similar ways sexually, why do they call themselves something different.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm interested in exploring the experiences of heterosexual, lesbian, and bisexual women in the 70s and seeing how they may have been similar in some ways, as they have different types of oppressions affecting them as women, but in other ways their experiences were very different due to their different sexual preferences and sexualities.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's interesting you should say that, because right away one of the things that I think a lot of bisexual women run into, and bisexuals in general, is the whole notion, well, you weren't around in the 70s.
Exactly.
That's why we call it a gay and lesbian movement, because we built the empire, not you. So I guess I'm curious, first of all, it surprises me that there was that much lesbian feminist writing in the 70s, let alone stuff that includes bisexuals. What have you been able to come across so far?
Well, there is, you know, a whole body of work called Lesbian Feminist Theory that emerged in the 70s. And the interesting thing is that there's a surprising amount of space and speech embarked upon about bisexuality and bisexual issues, but it's not called bisexual. That word is not used very much, but there's a lot of debate about, for instance, lesbians who sleep with men, that type of thing is going on, and about, you know, women who may be, you know, married to men, but then are coming out as lesbians, you know, in that process. And there's a lot of issues and a lot of tension around these bisexual issues, but they're not often directly named as being bisexual.
Mm-hmm.
Because that term really didn't become extremely politicized, especially in feminist circles, until the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm kind of doing some of the background work on bisexuality. And also I'm very interested in the situation in Canada in particular. Because compared to the amount of work that's been done out of the U.S. and Great Britain, there's been basically no academic research done on bisexuality in Canada.
So have you studied the studies that have come out of the States and the U.K.?
I have, yeah.
And
yeah.
What do they say?
Well, there's some work out by Paula Rust, for instance. She's a sociologist, and she is bisexually identified. And she's done research on, for instance, the sexual histories of attractions and sexual behaviors of lesbian and bisexual women. And she has found that actually there really isn't much difference at all between the sexual attractions and behaviors of bisexual and lesbian women. So she's led to believe, or she has concluded from her research, that the difference between these women is not actually in their attractions or behaviors, but it's more of in the way they conceptualize sexuality itself.
And perhaps also in their politics.
Exactly. Exactly.
And this is the same in the States as well?
Well, it is. I mean, her work, she's an American researcher.
Oh, sorry. I thought you said UK. So.
Oh, no, sorry. Or I might have and just lost my whatever. Yeah, she's an American researcher. And as I said, really, there's been nothing done specifically on Canada. And American research is also, I mean, they never mention Canada, you know, and so it's basically...
Gee, why am I surprised to hear that?
I know, and I should mention that I myself am American.
Okay, well, I'll watch what I say then.
Oh, no, I really don't care what you say about it, yeah, I've only been here for a year now, and since I've been in Canada, I've realized more than ever how much Americans actually do completely ignore what's going on in Canada. And so I'm hoping to maybe spark some more interest in other, you know, Canadian researchers and activists to start doing some more work on bisexual issues.
So I guess what is it that you've discovered so far then about the Canadian situation, and how does it maybe compare with what you've read in these other studies?
Well, what I'm suspecting, and when my research really gets started in September, I'll be getting more... more answers, but what I suspect is that the tensions, for instance, in the 70s between heterosexual, bisexual, and lesbian feminists were much more intense and heated and much more disruptive of the feminist movement in the States as compared to in Canada. And although a lot of American feminist theory was sort of, it's influenced Canadian feminism, certainly. On the level sort of discourse and written textual type of discourse. But what I've sensed and what the few Canadian researchers that have done work mainly on lesbian issues, such as Becky Ross, who is a professor at UBC, and also Julia Crete, they've also found that Canadian women seem to be able to work out their differences in terms of their sexual practices better than women in the U.S.
Is this another one?
Wonder why that is.
Is this another situation of Canadians being more, well, I don't know, what passive, more willing to agree to disagree, and the more, I don't know, Marcus of Queensberry rules, the fighting?
We just talk it out.
You guys would know better than I, because I'm a transplanted American, as I said, so... But the fact that these debates may not have been as heated here in Canada is very interesting to me. And because that aspect has not been included in any of in the realm of upcoming bisexual theorizing, you know, they tend to say that, oh yes, well, you know, in the 70s, lesbians and straight women who sometimes behaved bisexually were completely at odds, and you know, all this stuff is now happening because of it. But, you know, if it's the case that it wasn't so bad here in Canada, I think they need to limit their claims a little bit and kind of reformulate some of their theories.
So I'm assuming, Shauna, that the reason that you got interested in this research is perhaps that you're bisexual yourself.
Is
that the case?
Yes, that is very much so the case.
Okay. So what was it about your experience as a bisexual that caused you to want to do this then?
This particular project. I found myself here in Canada, and not knowing where to go, I finally found BiFace and other groups, and it was a really great sense of community for me, and it just really made me want to do more on bisexual issues, especially here in Canada, and also because I identify as a feminist. And I feel very strongly about feminist issues. And I know, you know, that there is, here in Vancouver and in other places in Canada, there's still a lot of tension between, particularly between lesbian and bisexual women. And I'm hoping that this project may actually help to alleviate some of these tensions, or at least be another starting point for discussion about bisexuality. And that maybe some good could come of it, some more progressive, you know, coalition-type work, things like that. And so my interest is, you know, right now it's mainly focusing on women because, you know, that's where my experiences is, and I am a bisexual feminist, and I'm hoping, you know, that it's on those issues that I can make a difference.
Mm-hmm. Well, certainly, I mean, we hear a lot about, you know, there's this, I suppose, there's this sense that I think bisexual people, and especially bisexual women, have, that somehow they're not completely embraced by the gay community, and that they're rejected in some way, but oftentimes it's very hard to put your finger on, you know, some clear evidence that that's the case, or some, you know, theoretical background for that idea, yeah. I suppose. And it seems to me that this work of yours might actually help to validate the feelings of a lot of those women. Is that sort of what you're hoping for as well?
Very much so. Very much so. It is. Let's see. I was going to say something else, and it slipped my mind. Do you have any other questions?
Well,
I think Craig had one.
Yeah, I did.
Oh, good.
One of the things that I noticed, because I'm doing my study, my homework right now, and that's I'm reading Bisexual Politics by Naomi Tuckey. That's the Bisexual Politics, Queries, Theories, and History, I think it is, or Visions. That's it, Queries, Theories, and Visions. And what Naomi does is she talks a bit about bisexual women being political leaders within the feminist movement and so on. And my question, I guess, goes to, well, what's happening in here in Vancouver? Do you think that there will be, you know, flowing, at least from this conference, sort of a women's bisexual network, at least a feminist network? I can get my words. Does that make sense to you?
Yes. Oh, yes. And I think that eventually that will happen. I would very much like to help out, in fact, with sort of getting something like that up and running. You know, when I was first coming to BiFace last September, I had noticed that the group seemed to be mostly men. And that's not always the case. Sometimes it's actually fairly even, and sometimes there's even a few more women. But it seems like the majority of people coming to the meetings are often men, and which is fine, and I think that, again, provides a really good form of discussion between men and women that is very much needed. At the same time, I think women have a lot of concerns that of their own that they, you know, should have kind of their own women, bisexual women's space in which to talk about things and to have, you know, maybe some social events and things like that. And I know that there are women in the group right now that are very much would like to see that happen, and are very, very active. And I think that as more people find out about us and find out about bisexual issues, that is something that will definitely be happening in the future.
Hmm. You know, I have to say, Shauna, one thing I find really interesting about your thesis topic is that you're focusing on the bisexual community between the 70s and the 80s.
Yeah.
And it just seems that it's really been since the 80s that bisexuals have really come to identify themselves, and only even recently in the 90s that we've started to develop our own political identity and our own sort of radical form of politics, as opposed to just blending into and supporting the politics of the lesbian, gay, bisexual community. So is the goal of your research to actually lead up to the present?
It does. I mean, the thing is, I fully realize that I may not have a lot of women, you know, that I can interview that actually identified as bisexual.
Mm-hmm.
And that's fine, because identity itself is not so important to me as the issues that went on with sexuality and feminist politics and that relationship. And a lot of it points to bisexual issues in behavior, at least, if not in identity. And yeah, I think that although it's very true that the identity did not become really politicized until the 80s, there were still a lot of things happening in the 70s around issues of bisexuality. And that's why, actually, in the title of my thesis, when I say the word, when I write the word bisexuality, I have the bi part actually in parentheses, which is to indicate that this thesis is not just about bisexual women, but it's about kind of the fluidity of sexuality in general and how diverse human sexuality actually is, and you know, and the relation between sexuality and politics in this particular time and place that I'm dealing with, that is the 70s in Vancouver.
I've got a question again. And is there a lot of research done for, now you're focusing a lot of it on what's happening with women and the women's movement, the feminist movement. But from a male perspective, do you know if there a lot of research is in that area as far as...